you're still on Fedora Atomic. You don't have to be on Silverblue, or we've been saying it wrong. It's not Ceresia.
No.
It's not that. I learned that too. Put that in the Googles, and that's not the word. So I'm going to avoid saying it. But it's the only one I can think of on the fly that's not Silverblue. Kinoite. I need to remember Kinoite.
Kinoite, yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, if you're on Silverblue, you're less on Silverblue than just using a Silverblue branded image. You could easily swap over to Kinoite,
mm-hmm.
or easily swap over to...
Yeah, you can totally rebase anytime, any place you want, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah. So like, you're not trapped into any of that. And mm-hmm. so like the idea of desktop hopping has basically been perfected with the immutables. So
yeah, you don't have to switch your whole operating system. You could literally just change the parts you don't want to keep. Coming up in this episode, telemetry helps us all. Immutability blues. And a correction or two. And more feedback. Lots more feedback. Welcome to Linux User Space. I'm Dan.
And I'm Leo. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Yeah.
I have had this dream about the show. It has been brewing for a little while, and it finally happened. It finally happened. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, this is exciting.
But I've been pining for a listener, watcher-driven show where every segment, normal segments that we normally always do, are backed up by feedback
mm-hmm.
that we get in. And we see it every now and then with the emails where it's like, you know, to please Leo, we have sent an email or, you know, whatever, right? Like, but
right.
It does. It pleases me. So much.
It does me too, because it makes it known that you're listening and there's, you know, not just two people here and talking, you know, into this computer box thing. You know, there's actually people out there listening to what we have to say and they appreciate and like and agree or disagree. And that's fine too.
The disagreements are fun, but the agreements are also cool and the suggestions are amazing.
Exactly.
So I like that it has... over time has morphed into more of a two-way conversation as opposed
right.
to just, yeah, us speaking into the ether.
Right. It might be a little asynchronous, but that's okay. I'm good with that. That's about yep. my pace, actually.
Well, me too. So, like, chats are fine. I really appreciate them, the real-time aspect of them. But sometimes there's big ideas that you have to, like, simmer on for a little bit before... Yep. You can respond, and you know, in a Discord or a Telegram or something like that, the conversation is long over and there's no more. And
right.
I think that's where things like email and forums and even YouTube comments even kind of shine in that, you know, they're kind of solidified there.
Yeah.
And it'll be there when you get back. And when you get back, you can write a maybe not well thought out. I mean, it's me we're talking about, but a thought out answer to something
right.
like that. So to start off, you know what's good, Dan?
I know what's really good.
Telemetry.
That's the best.
Yeah. I think for folks in the Linux circles, maybe the telemetry that's more their speed is the super low level stuff that, you know, can't possibly have personally identifiable information in it. And it also helps the maintainers.
Absolutely.
You know, think of things like PopCon in Debian.
Yep.
It's not the best place to get your information from as a maintainer, but it does give you a general idea.
Helps. Mm-hmm.
And it helps the maintainers, right? Like it helps them know what to focus on. And, you know, if nobody's installing this package anymore, do we need to keep packaging it?
Right. Right.
So it's a good thing. And for the never telemetryer folks, I think this is a step that maybe even those folks can tolerate.
Yeah, because, I mean, even if you got your tinfoil hat aligned up there.
And sometimes I do.
There's still anonymous things that you can send. You know, exactly, right? Like package statistics and whatnot to know,
yeah,
you know, how many installs of a thing exist. As long as you are given a choice of how much you can get involved and contribute there, you know, as far as the information, I think, you know, that's fine. At least you've got the option to say, nope, you're not getting anything from me. Or,
yeah,
you know, I want you to know this because I feel like it's important so that you can continue to maintain the thing that I love. I mean,
yeah,
those are the two directions you want to go, probably.
I've got two suggestions on this one, but all of them, both of them, include having something that does this basic telemetry installed
basic is good.
By default, right? But before it ever sends anything, a little pop-up comes up, or it's in the welcome screen that you're not allowed to skip, right? You have to answer the question. Now, my heart says there are two options, right? Opt-in, opt-out. And the radio button for opt-in is already filled out. It's already chosen. And if you want to leave it alone, you just click next. But I know that there's a big rebuttal against that, which is, you know, the choice is already made for you. But then that also negates having it opt out,
right,
filled in for you as well, right? So my heart says, leave it opt in, leave it up to the user to change it or not. But to those that may have a problem with that, maybe the answer is don't select either and force the user to choose one.
Yeah. Yeah. So no defaults. The default is none selected.
Yeah, the and default so then is
you
null.
Have to select something to move on.
Right, exactly. And you can't move on. Like you know how GNOME does it where it drops you into that like first user creation thing where you can't even do any, you can't launch a browser or anything.
Right.
Before you get through the welcome screen stuff. And you know that's when it should happen. Before you can accidentally send information. Before your system is customized in any way.
So this is one of the things I actually noticed in the new Plasma Welcome, which Plasma Welcome is very much like the GNOME Welcome thing. And it's
a good idea.
It's distro independent. And like one of the last pages in that welcome thingy.
The slider.
There's a slider. Yeah. You can pick, like it's on a sliding scale even. And it is set to none by default. But you can slide that all the way over and give them everything, or you can kind of pick one of the ones in between which only give certain things. So that's, I think a lot of different people are trying for the same things that we're talking about in order to get more information, to be informed, to be able to, you know, deliver a better product essentially.
Yeah. Now I can't remember actually. I'm thinking about it because I know that I explicitly, on this machine right here that's running Plasma 6 on Fedora Rawhide, which I need to get off of, I need help. Send help.
We'll help you.
How do I get off of that?
I got a plan. We got help.
Okay, cool. You got a plan. I'm going to trust you.
Okay.
That's one that I very much remember, and I made it a distinct point to, I don't remember if I had to do it or I just left it, but it is all the way to the right. It is give the Plasma folks whatever they want. And whatever they want was, you know, it didn't include my credit card information or anything like that, right? Like, and it wouldn't in, well, I hope so, in the future. But I trust these folks. They're big enough. They move slowly enough. I mean, yeah, even the move to Qt6, right? Like, that still had to happen.
Yeah.
But they move slow enough that, you know, stuff like that. You would see it coming before any of that stuff actually got deployed or, you know, trickled down to any distro or anything like that. But, you know, I cranked it all the way up.
So did I.
All the way to 11.
Yes, I did too.
And I think that's always going to be my stance, I think, for people that have earned the trust that we have given them, right?
Well,
I think you crank it all the way up.
Yeah, and I'll tell you some of the other reasoning why I dialed it all the way up. So I might not on every machine. Hear me out.
Oh,
so okay. Like you're right. Like
nuance. Yeah. Get this out of here.
I know. You know, this is a machine that I'm actually hoping to give my feedback to the developers, right? And so I did dial it all the way up on that one. It's a laptop. I know I'm doing some testing, if you will. Might be long-term testing because I really like Plasma 6, but that's just me. And so I did dial it all the way up. I might not on my desktop, though, because, you know, I kind of do maybe some more sensitive stuff there, and maybe I don't want everything to get out. And so okay. I'm still giving some valuable feedback from a machine I use on a regular basis, but not necessarily my main desktop machine, which I might do some different things on.
Yeah, like nuance never occurred to me, I guess.
Having the option gives you that ability, right? I mean,
yeah.
So it's nice. I guess where are we going with all of this is what the dear listener is asking, though, Leo.
I know, right? They said it was feedback driven. What are they talking? What are they rambling about for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Oops.
Well, that's what we do. So we actually did get some feedback in Matrix from Dan. Not this Dan, a different Dan.
Other Dan, Dan Johansson in Matrix.
Yep. And so Dan said, I would like to submit a pick focus for the next show, the Arch Linux package stats. So it has a systemd timer that you can enable, which will send stats every week or every 2 weeks. Dan sets it as a weekly timer so that it can be started with, you know, sudo system control enable now package stat timer thing. And it sends information about the Arch packages that he has installed.
Mm-hmm. And so this is Arch PopCon, basically. If you're familiar with Debian's PopCon, mm-hmm. it gives you an idea of what packages are installed on your system. And as that changes, as it always does, I mean, especially on an Arch, I would imagine, you're adding and removing stuff. That gets updated so that the maintainers get a really good view, a semi-good view, of what kind of packages people install. But here's the thing,
Not just packages. Versions too, right? So you can probably get some trends as far as when people and how much people update and stuff as well.
So I want to know. I want to see the output of the package stats thing. And by the way, that's PKGSTATS. So PKG stats. Install that. And by the way, the Dan learned a little later on that it enables automagically as you install the package as part of the hooks that happen after you install the package, the timer gets enabled. So you don't have to do anything other than install it and it takes care of it. But the cool thing I think about that is that I want to see the output of it just because do people on Arch really do what some people say on the internet, which is update like multiple times a day? Like what percentage of people? But I think
I don't know if
you
could dive into it that far necessarily, at least for the things that are, well, so they do have some graphs and stuff that are published, right? And so I'll share some links for that. It's in the Arch Wiki on the package stats page. They've got a couple of links there and I'll make sure to, you know, share those. I mean, you can actually search for any particular package and find out, you know, the install base necessarily. And there's an API. There's like all kinds of things you can glean from some of this stuff. And I'll definitely share the Arch Wiki page so that people can go and read about it themselves and decide whether or not they want to enable it. And so they have like this one little graph that is, they call it the fun page. And no surprise, Firefox is really towards the top of the browsers that are installed.
Okay, Firefox is cheating because Firefox is installed by default in every Arch system.
Well, not everyone, though.
Oh, I guess not, right? Oh, right? Yeah. Well, okay. Well, so Endeavor OS could install package stats.
Right. Oh yeah. So okay. So absolutely some of the Arch variants might have different, you know, packages that you wouldn't think of as a normal, right? By
default. And Manjaro would count too, right?
Right. Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Majaro, Endeavor, all of the Arch folks, right? Anyway, it's just, it's kind of cool to see at a glance some of these things. And
yeah, I love it.
You know, like Nano, really high, obviously, because it's by default.
Yeah, I think that one's even in the Arch Handbook, right? Like it's like VI or Nano. And then nope. I think most people opt for Nano.
Vim's pretty high, too. So just yeah. keep that in mind. But interestingly, when you go down to the desktop environments, Plasma.
What's is it?
Plasma, top. It's 33.79%. Wow. And Gnome Shell, next, at 21.11%.
See, so. Man, I've always had this gut feeling that, like, you know, people that are about getting a desktop that, you know, looks good, but it gets out of your way, mm-hmm. it's Plasma every yeah. time, every single time. Gnome is great. I think up until recently I preferred Gnome. Now they're neck and neck. I don't know what to do. I'm at a loss. But that's encouraging. You know, going to Plasma seems like what everybody else has done too, or at least more than half of the two top desktop yeah. counts.
It seems like, yeah. You know, this is, yeah. I mean, you have to do with these numbers what you want, but
yeah.
Interestingly, nobody ripped out Perl out of their distribution, probably because it's very tightly integrated into any Linux system. Like, you would really struggle yeah. if you did not have Perl.
That's Perl and Python. I think those two things. Well, like, check and see if the GCC compiler is in there.
So Perl, Bash, Python are. We're going to call those 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like, so 99.97% is Bash.
And oh, wow. Yeah.
99.78% is Python. Perl is 100%. Perl is 100%.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're telling me there is 0.03% of the install base that have installed package stats that are adventurous enough to rip out Bash? Was Bash?
I don't know what you're doing over there. I guess you could.
They swap in Zish. They fully remove Bash.
But you have to remove it. I mean, that's like woof.
Yeah, because what happens if you run across a Bash script? Which are extremely popular.
I guess CSH is enough POSIX compliant that you could maybe get away with that. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, you just have to go hand fix anything that doesn't quite translate over, right?
Wowzers. That sounds tough.
That's really cool, though. I love this. Now,
you could do what you want with these stats. They're kind of cool to look at. It's a little fun, like it says. So, I don't know. It's cool stuff. Go check it out. And, you know,
if you've listened this far, then here's my pitch. You don't get a vote unless you install package stats. So mm-hmm. if you want to have an influence on what these numbers, if you're the weird person, I don't know how weird it is, but if you're that person that rips out Bash and replaces it with something, what is it? What are you replacing Bash with? And what do you do when you run across a script written for Bash?
Right. Right.
You don't run it. I guess you write your own script, right? I guess that's the answer. But
I guess you're writing it in Perl.
Ugh.
It sounds awful.
You know what? It does sound awful. It sounds terrible. But yeah, so get your vote in. Install package stats. I still have an Endeavor box over here, and that's exactly what I'm going to do because I'm probably extremely vanilla, but still.
It helps the maintainers know what you're voting. You're basically voting for the thing that you want them to make sure is, you know, going to be maintained.
That's right. Get out and vote. So, you gonna see us out there on the YouTubes? Because this video technically exists on YouTube in the future if you're listening to the podcast. You get it like a week early.
Right.
So, YouTube, I guess you have to watch the whole episode to get the whole thing. But, you know, if you're waiting for the single issues in YouTube, you wait in like a week for these.
Right.
But the whole show, it's there.
Absolutely.
Day one. And history episodes or any kind of educational thing that we do, that shows up on Tilvids. So like, subscribe. I hate doing this part of the thing, but, you know, click on all the buttons and bells and whistles.
Ding some bells. Yeah.
Yeah. Do all that thing. Because it turns out we do like, did you know YouTube can do tweets? Well, sort of. Like toots. I should say toots. But they're not called toots either, and that's sad. But YouTube can do toots. And yeah, so you know, if you're not on the tweeters or the mastodons or whatever, we mirror a lot of what happens on those places over on YouTube too. So you can still get that same content if you're not on those on those platforms.
Yeah, we try to spread ourselves around to all the platforms so that everybody gets to enjoy.
Yeah, sometimes that's a little bit of effort.
Yeah, no doubt.
But it's there. It's out there. And of course, if you like the content, if you like the stuff, if you like our chatter, banter, talks, my pleas for you to install telemetry on your box, you can send us a buck or two over at Patreon. There's really cool stuff that you get. $1 gets you entry to the Lemmy server. You can sign up over there. So if you're not a fan of Reddit, but you like forums, that is quite literally, we have three places. We have the forum where you can just say whatever you want to say.
Yeah, that's just discussion.
We have a news place for all the news topics, and you can forum stuff under that.
Right.
And then we've got where our episodes happen. And if there's feedback, if you're not a YouTube person, you throw it through like the pipe thing, whatever that is. You do that thing, you can come over to Lemmy still and leave a comment. Mm-hmm. And then we can just discuss whatever you wanted to say over there. So anyway, you know, tracking free. I'm pretty sure Dan didn't install the Docker container that does the tracking.
I did not. You come on over there and give us a little feedback on an episode even. And, you know, that way it tracks with the episode that you want to, you know, give feedback to.
That's right. And that's what ends up in these episodes. That's this entire episode.
This whole episode. Yeah, we said we were going to do it and we did.
Y'all gave enough info, feedback, stuff for us to be able to do this, and I love it so much.
I do too.
So $3 gets you early access to the show a day or two early. $5 gets you access to the audio version of the chatter we do before and after the show, and sometimes it is sizable. The last episode, there was a full episode, dude.
At least.
It was a full episode's worth.
Absolutely.
So for five, you get the podcast version of that, and then for 10, you get the full-blown video version of that, and on top of that, you can just sit in while we're doing this. As I'm saying these words right now,
you get it live.
You could be in here listening to that and, you know, dropping us little notes as we go on through the episode, because I think Bruno's pretty keen on doing that, and it has shaped the show as we've done it.
Sometimes.
And like the ultimate form of feedback is that right there. But anyway, however you do it, however you contribute, however you consume, however you like to hang around in the circles, whether that means you're a lurker that does absolutely nothing but watch or listen, that's totally cool too. We appreciate you. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
And thanks for listening. And we'll see you again in the next one.
First up in our feedback, we got Muesli from Matrix, who says, "Hey guys, interesting video about mate. I have to say that GNOME 2.3 era is strange, and that there's still GNOME Classic supported to this day, with Wayland and all that modern goodies. And still, people run mate or cinnamon. It's fragmentation, and didn't serve the projects well, I think. Does mate have Wayland support now? The list looks like it. I have to try that in a Fedora VM." So we did talk about this a little bit in the episode. We might have glossed over it just ever so slightly. And we brought up the GNOME Classic thing a little bit. And
yeah, I don't think we ever specifically said whether it continued on or
right. We
not,
didn't really dive into that and follow that path very much.
Yeah.
So you're right. It does still exist. And yeah, it does have Wayland. And that may very well be why like Mate and Cinnamon are as far along in those things as they are.
Yeah.
Because they're looking, you know, they're watching that too. So I don't know that for a fact, but I have a feeling that's probably a real strong likelihood.
Yeah, as we record this, actually yesterday, Mate dropped another version, 1.28.2. Who,
that's another scoop, by the way.
Yeah, that's another scoop by Degra over on Mozilla.social, which is on the old Mastodon thing. Mm-hmm. They let us know that Mastodon 1.28.2 was released a day or two ago.
Yeah, Mate. Yeah.
So they're still working toward Wayland support. I think there's one or two bits that aren't fully there, but I think once that happens, it's testing time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And Cinnamon is in the same, about the same place, if you will, mm-hmm. because they just came out with a new version and they had the experimental Wayland session as an option in the login.
Which breaks quite often.
Well, it's experimental, right? And so,
yeah, it is.
So they're, you know, they're all working towards that Wayland target, I think.
Yeah, for the people that are adventurous enough to actually, first off, that know that you can do that, right? You have to follow the blog. You have to know that it's an option. You have to know that you need to log out and then choose your session and then log back in, right? So for those folks, the adventurous types, you can test Wayland on Cinnamon on Wayland right now.
Right.
And there's some things that just don't work, which is perfectly fine. I think it probably will not be until Linux Mint 23, which is based on Ubuntu 26.04,
right,
before we ever actually see a full-on, yep, Wayland's ready, go kick the tires.
Right.
Until then, I think we got about 3 more years or 4 more years.
With Cinnamon.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not.
Over 2 years. Probably not as many as 3.5 years, but we're getting close to it, and I think that's going to be a really cool thing because Wayland's coming. You can fight it all you want to, and you can stay on Debian and hang on for as long as you possibly can.
Probably, yeah.
But I mean, RHEL got rid of it. They're getting rid of it in 10. You don't have an X fallback. You have X Wayland, and that's all you get.
Right.
So,
well, I want to take this a little further, and you know the topic of fragmentation was brought up here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. So, like, is fragmentation a bad thing? I don't think so necessarily. I think it develops or it forces some healthy competition. Maybe co-opetition is what we want to call that.
Ooh.
Because
did you just make that up right now?
I don't know that I invented that, but I definitely maybe.
Okay, well, Dan invented that. I will say it.
All right.
And co-opetition is the best word that I've ever heard of to describe this thing. Yeah.
Because like we said, like the GNOME Classic is still a thing, and it is Wayland. And so I do think that is driving both of those other two projects. And they're looking at, you know, ways to solve some of their own problems, essentially. So I think pushing each other there is good.
Yeah, I think there's way more cooperation. See, you've got me. I love the word too much. There's way more cooperation between these desktops than I think a lot of people would ever notice. Absolutely. On the surface.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the amount of people that just work in on Qt and that stuff percolates down, and there's so many people talking to each other in different projects, and same with all the GTK ilk.
Right.
There's so much community. I mean, Clem, Linux Mint, he was up until very recently on both Cinnamon and the Mate development teams. So not only was there, cooperation between the two, there was the same person on both teams.
Right, right.
So I think, but it always boils down to one fact for me. About this fragmentation thing, about saying that fragmentation is not the way that we should go. We should, you know, cooperate more, even though we are cooperating. I say we, developers are cooperating a whole lot on this stuff. You have to remember that the fragmentation is caused a lot of times by someone scratching their own itch, by someone having a good time doing a thing that they want to do, and they would not have otherwise worked on the big project.
Take that a little further, and it wouldn't continue to exist if people didn't enjoy it and the developers and whatnot didn't notice that, you know, too, right? So they created it, okay, that's a bit of a fragment, but people are requesting it at the same time, and they feel valued in their, you know, contributions, so that's why they keep it going.
Yeah, well, I mean, remember a little while ago, I said something about, you know, if you don't want Wayland, you're going to have to hold on to mm-hmm. X forever. Mm-hmm. That was Mate. That was the exact response.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of person that's doing both.
Right. Well, and so, like, they all exist in their own little silo, but that doesn't mean they don't work together, I guess, is the right. big takeaway.
Yeah, yeah. That's super important, because that's not something, nobody tweets about that. You know what I mean? Well, and if they do, it gets like six updutes, whatever right. they are.
Yeah, don't know.
And like, it doesn't get any traction because it's not salacious. It's not adversarial. You know, there's not drama happening because right. two people decided, on two different teams, decided to share information. Like,
yeah,
that doesn't get clicks. And so it doesn't bubble up to the top.
Yeah, and so, like, the projects exist separately because they have different mission statements, but that doesn't mean some of the foundations can't be the same.
That's right. So, Muesli continues, and all of a sudden, I'm really hungry for cereal.
Yeah.
Hot. The hot. Sticky cereal.
Sticky oats. That sounds good.
Yeah, I like throw some blueberries in there, man. Really like? Cinnamon, sugar. Oh,
you know what I really like is oatmeal cookies.
Mm. Oh, okay. Raisins or no raisins?
I like raisins.
Oh, see, that's a blasphemy thing because people confuse us with chocolate chips, but 100%
no, raisins.
Oatmeal raisin
yeah.
over a chocolate chip.
Oh, yeah, hands down.
Any day of the week. Mm-hmm. Any day of the week. That's a hot take right there, baby. Get yep. your chocolate chip out of here. Oatmeal, raisin, get in my belly.
And it's cereal and fruit, so it's got to be good for you. Anyway.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So maybe not oatmeal, maybe muesli. I don't know. But
it could work.
They continue. I recommend you to take a look at Secure Blue, which is a very cool project. It takes UBlue, which itself is Atomic Fedora with all the restricted stuff included, and adds additional security on top. There are 86 images. 86.
Bowsers.
Created from a single GitHub repo, which is also quite crazy, and all the build process is quite beautiful and efficient. There are already a ton of images, and most WMs and desktops' only requirement is Wayland support. Oh, yeah, Fedora, right? Because
right, mm-hmm. yeah.
There also is a server version, which can replace Fedora CoreOS or IoT, while IoT should really be called Fedora Atomic Server. You know, we'll get into that just a little bit. The images fix some long-needed security issues and have evolved from experimental and opinionated to really usable.
Cool.
Mate could be an added image, but I can imagine its less frequent development could lead to security issues. There's a Cinnamon image, and I'm curious to try Cinnamon on Wayland. By the way, you can already try Cosmic on Atomic Fedora. It got merged under the UBlue namespace and is already somewhat usable. Still in pre-alpha, so be warned. Now, we gotta
there's a lot
do a
to
couple
unpack
things.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He said Secure Blue, UBlue, mm-hmm. the Atomic word. And for people that did not go back and are caught up on episode 4 of season 4, happy rebasing to everyone, that goes into the history of Silver Blue and, you know, Fedora because you have to.
Right.
And that it was called the Atomic, like the Atomic
name.
That's
how it got started. Yeah.
Exactly. And hang tight. We're going to come full circle on that.
Absolutely.
So, let's talk about Secure Blue for a sec. A couple of years ago, George Castro started this project. I dug back, and I always look at the README, because the README, I swear, is always like, it's with the first thing or is the
first
thing.
It's like your first init.
In
yep.
a repo.
Yep.
Right. There may be something older than that, but I go for the README. That's where we're going with this, a couple years ago. George Castro started this project, and he described it as
immutable Fedora images for GNOME, KDE Plasma, Bluefin, Sway, Cinnamon, Wayfire, River, Hyperlant, and some hardening applied.
And it's based on Bluebuild. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But Bluebuild is a service that
creates accessible tools for you to create, configure, and build custom images of Atomic Fedora distributions.
Okay, and all that is based off the ideas that exist in official distribution images like Fedora Silverblue, one of the original immutables, again, season 4, episode 4.
Right.
And it seems to Maya very much like Universal Blue. So the UBlue thing, Universal Blue, and I think we're just going to call it UBlue. Because they call it UBlue?
Everybody they call it UBlue. UBlue. Yeah, it's short. Okay. Yeah.
So it's UBlue. Because like Secure Blue, it takes the Silver Blue idea a little further. So UBlue says,
our main images offer GNOME, KDE, XFCE, LXQt, Budgie, and Mate, with more being added regularly. Our NVIDIA images offer unique blend of reliability and ease of use that you won't find anywhere else. These are offered in a variety of images to fit your needs.
And they got like an Asus one that has like Asus drivers and stuff built in. With I think there's a kernel. There's a Asus kernel that has all the junk built into it. That way you don't have to do the OS tree, you know, rebuild and throw this in there and bork your entire immutable system.
Yeah.
They've got a framework one. They've got a Surface one. But okay, so to recap, Silverblue is Fedora's general immutable version that works a lot like how Android, iOS, or even Chromebooks work. And then there's also Kinoite, and I know I'm saying it wrong, Ceracea, something, whatever that was, the Sway one.
The Sway version, yeah.
Yeah, that one. Where the image is the entire system, right? Like, it's kind of like you download an entire new ISO every time you update. And because you don't update individual packages. You update the whole system.
Right.
You jump from version to version. Regular applications are typically just flat packs.
Right.
And you can work around it. You can work around, you know, this thing doesn't work in Flatpak RPM Fusion. I'm looking at you.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to do this thing called layering.
Yep.
But, you know, takes a little bit of CLI magic. You got to learn a couple new commands to make all that work. But it's still Fedora under the hood. And that comes with all the usual FOSS sharp corners like no proprietary codecs by default. But that's what UBlue and by extension SecureBlue are trying to fix.
Right.
Right? They just give you the system the way I argue Fedora should have given it to you in the first place. But they...
Yeah, there's licensing reasons.
And I understand why. I just don't like it.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
They make a great system if you were really interested in utilizing the not proprietary things. They make it there for you. So you don't have to strip anything out. So that's kind of nice. And yeah,
I talk to the bloat guys. They'll still strip stuff out. I know. But
like, it's a pain. I get it to add things on, but I think you have to start with the lowest common denominator before you know, because it's easier to add things on than it is to strip them out, I feel like. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a bad place to start. I wish it was a little easier to get a hold of the things that you need. But, you know, I totally understand it and I work around it. I mean, it's Fedora right there. I work around it. It's not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. But you do need a little bit of know-how to get it done. Or you just come into Telegram and ask.
I'm warming up to it. I don't know if I'm all in yet, but no, I'm not all
half in.
I'm half in, half out. I like to explore things. And I blame Neil Gompa on this because he's the one that got me. I don't know why. It's Plasma 6. It draws me in every time. It's all his fault.
I think it's worth a look because, you know, I'm a fan of hardening up the system, right? Like, I will freely give people I trust telemetry on my system, but everybody else can, you know, run up against the brick walls that SecureBlue is providing.
You're right.
That is a fantastic thing. So that's great. But if all that jazz wasn't confusing enough, the base, SilverBlue, and all of its ilks, Ceracea and Kinoite and everything else, got a new umbrella rebrand. This just happened last month, I think.
A few weeks ago, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it's not too long.
All the main Fedora immutable distros got a new umbrella term, and they're all called the Fedora Atomic Desktops. which is a recurrence of the old name, which was Fedora Atomic Workstation. They're the same thing.
Yep.
It's the same idea.
What's old is new.
Yeah, but it's more fleshed out. It's a 2024 version of where Workstation started us all out. Yeah, go make sure check out season 4 episode 4 Happy Rebasing to Everyone. It goes into the history of all of this jazz. It came out too early to cover the Atomic desktop rebrand, but we told you here. So now you know.
We're all caught up again.
That's it. So if you fall into both camps, immutability and tinfoilability, you'll love Secure Blue. Now, if we could just get Secure Blue built into the uBlue images for the framework based on Fedora Silver Blue, based on Fedora Workstation, based on the Linux kernel, I'd be a happy camper.
Well, I'm going to guess that you probably aren't going to have to wait forever, Leo. I think it'll happen.
Yeah, probably not. I have a feeling that I could just take like the YAML from one project and slap it on the YAML from the other project and
make your own image.
Yeah, and then use the what was the name of the thing? I already forgot.
Blue build.
To just roll my own.
Just build your own.
That right there is the wonderful world of immutability and atomicity. It's wonderful. Just like throwing a fresh new ROM on your Google Nexus 5. So catch these and other great topics as they unfold on the Lemmy subreddit or our news channel on Discord, which now feeds in from Lemmy. So Lemmy is now the canonical news place. Now I have to figure out how to get Reddit to accept Lemmy stuff.
Maybe and we then, could just... I don't, yeah, that's one way to do it. I mean, I guess they all have RSS feed thingies, don't they?
Yeah, can Reddit ingest from an RSS feed? Because that's all we need. Because Lemmy has, like, by default, just RSS, curates the RSS for you. That's how I'm actually getting it into Discord. Discord has a bot that feeds in through an RSS feeder, and so I'm just having it look at Lemmy, and it just boop, 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 all the things.
I'm not sure, because, like, of all the hubbub that went down with all the stuff at Reddit, like, that's the terms and conditions problem, or I don't know. Who knows?
And they're public now? They just rolled into a public company now.
I don't know. Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm glad we have Lemmy as a backup.
yeah. It's the primary now, I think. I mean,
yeah,
like
it seems to be going that way, doesn't it?
I post stuff to Reddit because we have a few folks over on Reddit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Lemmy's where it happens, man. There's a lot of engagement over on Lemmy.
Seems like.
Yep.
But we're still there, too, so yeah.
Yep. Of course, you can dig us up on Mastodon. You can dig us up on the old Twitters as well. And of course, if you want to chat, there's the Discord, as I was mentioning before, but there's also Telegram and Matrix if you're of the FOSS persuasion and don't want to get your grubby little hands dirty with all that proprietary jazz. And then we do live streams on Twitch. So those happen usually the day after an episode airs, unless something happens and we either postpone or cancel, something like that. But, you know, day after an episode airs, look over to the Twitch because we'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not the live kind of person, we wait a couple days and we post that over on YouTube as well for you to go watch the they call it VOD, video on demand in Twitch. So you can get the VOD over on YouTube.
That's a good name.
Anyway, go find us. We're out there.
All right, more feedback. In this next section, a quick correction that we have here. Zensmander 1223 on
I love
YouTube.
The way it starts.
He says, Captain Smarty Pants here. I'm no expert, but I doubt Open Indiana is a BSD, but a Solaris. That's its own thing. Thanks for making most of the screenshots non-transparent. Much better visible. So two things to unpack on that in the little short statement, right?
And we're about to correct one. We've already corrected the other. So I want to start with the screenshots thing first, get that out of the way. So before, it was like 20% transparent. Anything that came up on the screen, you could kind of sort of see Dan and my face behind it. Because I was like, well, who doesn't want to look at our face? And then I was like, well, everybody. And so, so now anything that comes up on the screen has no transparency. So, I mean, you can focus on whatever right. is on the screen. Now, there's not a ton of stuff on the screen. I don't have that much time. But there's whatever does come up, any website that we're talking about, any image that we're talking about or whatever comes up on the screen, which is, I mean, kind of sort of hawking the YouTube a little bit. If mm-hmm. you want to see that stuff, you can go over there and check it out.
Yeah.
But now everything is not transparent at all, I think. I may have missed one, but I think they're all fully opaque. You can see them all now.
That's good.
It's really, really good.
So that's fixed up. Leo fixed that. Back to the Open Indiana thing. Yeah, okay. You got us on that one. It's it's not a BSD. It's Solaris. That's kind of a Unix,
yeah.
I guess. They all sort of have the same home, if you will.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna call Open Indiana a Unix. I know it's not a BSD, but
so Solaris, I guess, is a Unix, which makes Open Indiana a Unix, right?
Right.
Question mark.
So I don't know. Yeah. So you know we're. We don't dabble much in the
we
Unix side of things. well, yeah.
If you
I guess
look up in the title, it says Linux user space.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could totally get how we made this mistake.
Right.
So a BSD comes from Unix.
Right.
Right. Like, as in spiritually, the kernel right. itself is not Unix, nor
correct.
Is the user space Unix, but it's all POSIX compliant.
Right.
So it's Unix-like.
Correct.
And I think that's the key word there. All of these things, Open Indiana, Solaris, HP UX, IBM's thing, whatever that was,
yeah.
those are Unix-likes. Because unless you came from AT&T, are you a Unix?
Yeah, probably not, right? Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's really the distinction to be made, right? Like, nothing is actually a Unix.
Except for Unix.
Because that would mean, you're right, except for Unix System 7, or I don't remember. So, okay, that one I probably got wrong. Don't quote me on that one. But, right, like, so there's a mm-hmm. there's a very specific thing that has to be a Unix. But,
right.
So is being Unix compatible enough to get you branded as a Unix? Like, are you a Unix? At that point, or do you have to qualify it with Unix-like?
I think it's Unix-like, and I think the point of it being its own thing is pretty valid.
Okay,
they don't necessarily probably carry everything over, right? So
sure, but the tooling is gonna be
it's adjacent, yeah.
So, but that's the thing, right? Like besides, so going from like big Linux distros, so like going from Debian to the Red Hat mm-hmm. tree.
Right.
You would be forgiven for missing that one tool that's different between the two, but the other 98% of the tooling is exactly the same. Maybe the names are different, but, you know, we all carry GCC. We all carry...
Not everybody, but yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, okay. Z, I guess this is where it gets really hairy, right? Because then you have people like Alpine that don't.
Yep.
But...
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's not.
And then you got some like Void that have both.
Yeah. So is it the kernel that makes it a Unix?
Maybe.
And that's why nothing can be a Unix.
Maybe. That's
yeah.
a good question. I don't know. Give us some yeah. feedback. Drop it down there in the comments.
I want to send
it somehow. I don't know. Let us know what you think on this topic, because it's interesting.
I only know
to clarify, we probably did misspeak. Probably.
Oh, we definitely did on the Open Indiana thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, oopsie daisy on that. Sorry.
Oops. Yeah. Point taken.
Mm-hmm.
But now I want clarification.
Mm-hmm.
I want to dive down this rabbit hole. This is not a rabbit hole I'm going to leave unrabbited. I need to know what exactly makes a Unix. Is it AT&T? Is it just the kernel? And then after that, when you've deviated from that kernel, you're no longer a Unix. You mm-hmm. are a Unix-like. And I feel like that's probably where it'll land, but so then BSD is Unix-like.
Ish.
Would Linux be Unix-like?
It has some Unix-like tendencies, but I don't
know. We deviated further from POSIX than most.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Some distros, maybe all, deviated from POSIX.
We share some tools. There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah.
And so it is a bit, it's a bit of a tangent, if you will.
Yeah. I love it. Let's go down this rabbit hole, y'all. Send me some feedback on this one. Educate me. I have no clue.
Such a deep topic. Yeah.
I know.
Operating system philosophies. Next feedback item is from Visamp on Matrix. Have you guys done one about your backstory? I mean, who you are? Maybe some life experience and how you came into Linux. I'm about 6 to 8 months into my Linux journey, so I guess that would be interesting to know.
A newbie!
Yeah, especially how you guys found your way toward maintaining an Ubuntu version, and like, what's your full-time gigs. That said, if you've done this or don't want to go that direction, no worries.
We do everything people tell us to do, so.
We do, and so, like, we're going to put our past in the future.
Hey, okay.
All right.
Back to the
something
past.
Like that.
Back to the future's past.
Maybe. More deep topics. Anyway, you're right. We did do a very brief overview. Season one, episode one or two.
I think both.
Maybe.
We kind of carry on a conversation about where we got our start.
Very, very, but it was brief, very brief.
Yeah, because, I mean, that first episode wasn't even an hour long, was it? Or it was close. And
about.
Yeah, we talked more about why we're doing this show kind of stuff.
Four hosts at that point.
And yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you cram four people into an hour and you have a lot less time. So we got very brief with our backstories there. Leo and I both did interviews with Rocco, one of our former co-hosts, in a show he called Linux Spotlight. So you can see more there. I'll have links in the show notes as well. So
my camera is weirdly fisheyed. Sorry.
I don't know. Like it was a while ago, so I don't even remember what I said anymore. And probably a lot of things updated since then. So we'll try to touch on some of those things, I think, in the future. But, I mean, I guess, really briefly, I've been into computing since I was about 4 or 5 years old, and I won't tell you how old I am now, but to date myself, like, my first computer was a VIC-20.
Oh.
And so, that was where I got my start, and quickly progressed into, you know, IBM DOS-based stuff. For quite a long time until Windows became a thing, and then obviously did some Windows. But where I'm going with all of that, early in, you know, once the internet came around, I got very interested in alternative operating systems and just trying anything and everything that would run on an x86, you know, platform. And so I tried a lot of different things, and Linux is one of the ones that did stick around, obviously. So
obviously.
So there you go. So that's really the very basic brief backstory of mine.
Says the guy doing a Linux podcast. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Counterpoint. Mm-hmm. My baby story. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually get full blown computers until the DOS days. So my start happened, I want to say, I don't have the machine anymore. I wish I did. It would be behind me. Mm-hmm. An Atari 2600? ?
Okay.
I played Centipede on it a lot. And this one was weird. So anytime I ever see anybody doing one of those controller compilations of like, which one did you start in? I'm like, mine's not on there, because I don't know how or why, but I had a controller that had the joystick and the button.
Okay.
But it also had a full number pad on it.
Really?
So okay. Maybe.
That's a weird one.
Yeah. Maybe listeners of the show could tell me which exact Atari I had, because maybe I didn't have what I think I had. But all I can tell you is that it definitely played Centipede.
Sure.
And I definitely played Centipede lots of times. I think I had Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I rehave Pac-Man now.
That controller almost sounds like a aftermarket third party type of thing.
It could have been. It maybe like the Mad Cats back in the day where that's the controller that you give to the person you don't like that's coming over to your house and you're like, here, man, it works great. And then it's like got joystick drift before we ever coined the term.
Yeah, well, they didn't have drift back then. They either had all the way on or all the way off, right?
Yeah, I mean, why am I turning in circles, man? I'm not even start the game.
Which is why directional pads were a thing, because they worked just as good as the stick did. So
yeah, exactly, because the joystick didn't actually have degrees of movement. It was just once you get past a certain point, it's on.
Right.
And it's like, at what point?
That's where the shuttle thing came in. Remember the big dial wheel thing?
Yes.
The shuttle thing.
Pong.
So that's where that thingy came in.
Absolutely. So I cut my teeth on an old Atari. There was no input other than your joystick, right?
Yeah.
Well, that could have been. I just was not cool enough to understand it. Then I moved to a Nintendo, played way too many games. And then very quickly after that, we got a Windows machine that my mother put together by hand, installed DOS herself, and basically handed it off and said, nice. Here you go.
That's good.
You put a floppy in the machine. Here's how you get into the right directory and run the setup.exe or whatever and kind of play around with that. Which is funny because now, very on the other spectrum, very other end of the technology spectrum on that now, where it's just like, oh, what's a Chrome now?
Yeah, right.
But so I started in DOS. We got Windows 3.1 and the upgrade pretty quickly after that. So I was like halfway into Windows, halfway out of Windows, and exit to DOS, right?
That was right. That's how you play
almost
your games.
Anything I ever wanted to do. Yeah, anytime you wanted to do anything, and then the sound card issues
that you
dealt with at that time, and then Windows 95, which was more the same, but it looked way cooler.
Handled that multimedia stuff much better too.
Oh yeah, and then it wasn't until the late 90s we're on Windows 98. I'm helping in a high school lab install Windows 98 SE using Xcopy and stuff. And then the guy that's, I'm working as a summer job, and the guy that's working there is like, hey, what do you know about Linux? And I'm like, whatix? And he's like, here. And I'm pretty sure it was Slackware 8.2, had KDE 3 on it, had the coolest alien wallpaper of all time on it. And that was it. That was the turning point. So it was it was Slackware. I bought a box of Mandrake off the shelf and just played with those. So I wasn't Linux full time or anything, but it was any chance I got, if I could get it installed without blowing up my machine, which is why Mandrake was so cool, because they had that Lin2DOS thing or whatever it was. Ubuntu Wubi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before it was Wubi, they had one. And
I remember
it let me install it on the machine that I had, but I had a Win modem, so I couldn't dial up in Linux, so I was very limited. But anyway, that's it. From a console gamer to a Windows guy to a Linux person, and I've never left the orbit of Linux since then. It's just been...
at least around, yep.
Yeah, I've been Linux adjacent or Linux full time ever since that point. And it was because of customization. Windows 95, remember themes? You could change a theme and the sounds changed and stuff like that. And then I was like, oh God, Linux does that for real without having to buy Windows 95 Plus.
Anything. Yep, no plus. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, and then I just got lost. I'm in the Linux verse now.
Yeah, same thing. But we plan to drop some more little nuggets in future episodes as well. Obviously, much more backstory than that. So we'll give you a little taste of a little backstory,
little
here and there.
Little baby bird, bird. I got you.
We'll keep them coming.
I got you. So another bit of my backstory came later in the 2010s. So Peter Jones wrote in, I used to be a frequent listener to Mintcast, but stopped after Leo moved on. It's great to have discovered Leo again, co-presenting the Linux User Space podcast. I will be sure to subscribe and donate. So a quick blurb from 2018 to 2021 ish. I did another podcast, Mintcast, mm-hmm. and that was all about Linux Mint. It still is all about, mostly about Linux Mint. But, you know, just like when I was on the show, we went on wild tangents that had nothing to do with Mint. It was just a bunch of people that used Mint full-time or used Mint part-time or just knew a little bit about Mint getting together and talking
installed
about
Mint once.
Stuff.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So go check that one out. There's another cool podcast that spun off of that one called Crowbar Kernel Panic mm-hmm. that is mostly a gaming / Linux / technology podcast. They talked about a lot of AI. They're talking a lot about AI generation, which is right up mm-hmm. my alley. And not so much games anymore. I still play a whole lot. I played a whole lot of Civilization. That just ate my entire 2 days in a row.
I'm guilty.
That game's crazy. But
crazy fun.
But yeah. And so they're very entertaining. So kind of in that Mintcast orbit, there's some really, really cool stuff that spun off. There's also Full Circle Weekly, which is a news podcast. I think Moss does that one still. Mm-hmm. I took over that one and then handed it off to Moss after a little while. And then there's also, what is it? Distro Hopper's Digest, where they kind of cross over with us where they do distro hopping.
Yeah. Really deep dives into, you know, distros. And, you know, they divide them up and they do, you know, each one of them does a distro for an entire month. And then they come back and talk about their experience.
Yep.
Less about the history, more about their experiences and what they encounter. So.
Exactly. And they're a pretty wide bunch, right? I mean, mm-hmm. someone that just wants it easy and then someone that doesn't mind to get into the technical bits and then someone, it's all a really nice mesh of.
Yeah. It's a good grouping. Yeah.
Definitely is. So, Peter, thanks for bringing up Mintcast because I haven't talked about any of those shows or any of those offshoots or anything like that for a long while.
Right.
And we're about due for one of those. And I guess we don't technically have we don't have like a community focus as we've done community focuses.
We haven't done one in a little bit,
So take this as a slight community focus. Go check out those podcasts. If you like mm-hmm. this kind of thing, they're also good to have a listen to. A real fun bunch.
Yep, I agree. So next up is Emiliano. And Emiliano wrote his message in Spanish, which is cool because...
And that's how Dan's going to read it. He's going to read it in Spanish.
I'm sorry, I'm not. I was really proud of myself. I stretched the gray matter and I went back to over two decades and was able to at least understand the message well enough to know what was going on. I did.
That's all you need.
I threw it in the translator and verified because, like I said, two decades.
Yeah. I don't think I was ever truly fluent. I'm less fluent today.
Right.
So I had a very similar experience. Was like, ooh, what is that word?
So I will go ahead and read the translation.
Wait. You gotta say the first two words, though, instead of the translated first two words.
Okay.
I know you can do that.
Hola, chicos.
Yes, that'll work. All right.
Yeah, so he says, you know, hey, guys, how are you doing? I hope it's okay. My name is Emiliano, and I'm from Argentina. I found your YouTube channel searching about XFCE and its history since it was my first desktop environment when I switched to Linux, looking to optimize the RAM I had at the time. And what happened? Well, I became enamored with XFCE. The mm-hmm. notebook turned on and off in seconds, and I could have left a lot of things open, and it felt fluid. I'm relatively new to Linux and its components, so what you do on the channel helps me a lot to continue learning where things came from and why they were done the way they are done. I watch them reading the subtitles generated in Spanish with YouTube's automatic translation, where I understand 90% of the things that are said. Greetings and keep up the good work. Now, that is absolutely amazing that you got to the 90% mark from the things that spewed out of my face, because I am sure I've not set it up for great translation. So,
yeah, well, I think we're both guilty of using turns of phrases, right? Like,
oh,
we're both
absolutely.
guilty of turn of phrase is one way to put it. You said a different word.
Euphemisms, maybe?
Euphemism. Yeah. And those are the things that just don't get translated
very well
at all.
Nope.
There's a couple things to unpack. XFCE, my nemesis.
A little bit, yeah.
But I have to 1,000% agree. If it works for you, it's still going to be one of the lightest weight, fastest desktops that you can get your hands on.
Yeah, it's one of the best GTK-based desktops, I think, as far as resource utilization.
Yep. I have fallen in love with a very similar branch of GTK conservatism, which is Mate.
It's a little heavier, but not. They're about the same, I think.
Yeah, I feel like they would still be in the same weight class in like a UFC fight or a boxing match.
Yeah,
they would
be in the same. Maybe. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. From the top ropes, Mate. could totally do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think they come out to be really close. I think ultimately, like, you put Mate and Cinnamon like right there together in one little grouping. I mean, below that, you probably got like LXDE and LXQ. If we're talking full desktop environments, and somewhere in there, just in between that grouping, is probably KDE Plasma.
Yeah,
and then you know, on the other side, GNOME.
Yeah, you would be. Yeah, sorry, GNOME, but it's true. You would be, I think, so surprised by how lightweight KDE Plasma can be,
mm-hmm.
especially if, and by default, right? Like, but especially if you turn off the animations.
Yeah, you have to turn off all the bling.
Right. Exactly. I mean, but that's, you're already in that situation with XFCE where there are no animations.
There's not much bling, though. But it works well. So, I mean, that's great.
And you still get things like KRunner built all the way in. And
yeah, they got some cool tools. Yep.
Just really cool. But the other thing you brought up, we talked about this in the pre-show. It doesn't make it to the show, but we talked about it in the pre-show just a little bit. Kden Live dropped a new version, 2402. Mm-hmm. It now fully works on all the platforms, including Apple Silicon. And it's got better Whisper integration, which allows me to generate those translations.
Well, transcript. Like a transcript.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Transcript allows me to generate the transcript on the fly before it ever hits YouTube, which means that I can likely get a better quality translation. Well, I mean, if the English is good, minus euphemisms, it will translate well
into every
language. And I think we can do some work on that side to help make that better.
I think so.
Because that's just so cool, man.
It is cool. I really appreciate you taking the time and extra effort that it does to be able to watch our show. And I'm glad it's helpful for you. I think that's great. And back to your point with the transcript thing, we might be able to drop that right into Fireside as well. And so that those things might actually be able to show up in your podcast player, potentially, if that is supported there. So I think we're going to do some testing on that in this episode, and we'll see how that goes.
You have inspired us to make things slightly better, especially for folks that are non-native English speakers.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It is.
And the other thing that I wanted to add is the 10% of stuff that doesn't make sense.
It probably doesn't make sense.
Maybe, but leave us a comment about that and we can clarify, especially if it's in the history stuff or we're explaining something. I would love to be able to get that to a point where it is beyond English speakers,
where it
goes further than that.
We might be able to just use some different words and develop that translation a little better because, you know, that's how it works. So,
man, I'm all about being inclusive. Let's do it.
Yeah, no, same. As always, we'll have some other things that we'll jam into the show. And in between shows, you can catch us on Twitter, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, Discord, all those great things. You know, give us some suggestions and feedback. We love that stuff. And you can join the conversation, even real time. We can have a Telegram or Matrix real time chat and, you know, give us all the ideas.
Yeah, we love it so much. We made an entire show from only feedback. That was it from top to bottom. The whole show was just feedback. I love it. Oh, it's so good. It was so good.
And so you can catch all those notes and links, all that stuff. Oof. Is linuxuserspace.show. That's where you go.
Fantastic.
All right, so we're not doing a full-on community focus, but this is a bit of a community focus, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the, you know...
My notes problem?
Notes problem that Leo's having. He's having a problem of not enough note applications, so send
we'll
him
get
in.
There.
I'm just kidding.
That's kind of true, right?
So, first up is Scott, and Scott says, "Guys, just more feedback on the note apps to add to the pile. I use Joplin.
It's a big pile.
It is a big pile. I use Joplin for quite a while, but don't like that it keeps your notes in a non-standard format, making it impossible to use different apps to access the same notes, and making it very hard to export your notes."
Yeah, this is why I've crossed Joplin off the list, because
that's fair.
I don't want to be locked in.
So the best solution that I've found is to use Markdown Notes with Nextcloud, which is one of the things Leo was using, with the subfolders for notes in Markdown format. I use the Nextcloud Notes app in the browser and on mobile. And on my desktop, I use QOwn Notes. QOwn Notes is a great app that uses Markdown, has tons of themes, recognizes subfolders as tags for notes, and syncs with Nextcloud API. So if you delete a note, it uses the trash folder in Nextcloud. That's kind of nice.
Having the
Nextcloud backend with QOwn Notes as your front end. So that's kind of cool. I definitely recommend giving QOwn Notes a try. It's available from most distros from their OBS hosted repository. So OBS is the build system, open build system, not open.
Oh, right. Not open broadcast.
Broadcast thing. Software. Just wanted to clarify that.
Not the streaming thing.
Before people, you know,
Yeah.
And they also have it on FlatHub, the AUR, and it has a PPA. So a lot of different options to get that one. So that's cool.
Yeah. This one's really cool because so I haven't found a home yet, but my favorite so far is the built-in Nextcloud Notes with the web browser thing, because it splits the difference, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's Markdown, and then there's
pretty
the preview
text.
Mode.
Yeah, the pretty text.
Nextcloud Notes splits the difference by formatting.
Kind of overlay.
Like, when you do a heading, right? Like, it makes it big up in the top. And, you know, your subheadings get smaller and smaller. The only thing that I really, you know, it bolds your text. It italicizes your text. It does all the cool, fun stuff to let you know what you're looking at before you ever have to go in the preview pane. The only one thing that I ran into was links, but I got a solution to that, which is using the reference style 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in place of the link in the writing, and then putting all those links, the actual long bits, down at the bottom of the page. Mm-hmm. So that makes that really, really easier. So if nothing else, I think QOwn Notes is probably going to be my fail-safe.
Okay.
If I can't get along with anything else, QOwn Notes is nice because it splits the difference just like Nextcloud does, and it just uses the Nextcloud backend. So if QOwn Notes, or I don't have it or something at the time, I'm able to get into the raw Nextcloud Markdown editor, and it looks just like QOwn Notes anyway. So Scott, I think you're right. This might be where I end up. But Desert Doug comes in with even more.
He does.
I'm going to call it confusion, because it's a me problem. It's not a you problem. This is not you, Doug. It's me.
But you made the waters a little murky for you.
Well, he helped me hurt myself, I think. Is so Desert Doug writes, "Hi, guys. You mentioned your search for a note-taking app on your podcast. I went through the same search recently, so I think I can make some relevant suggestions. The areas that are important to me in a note-taking app are search. I'm tired of taking extensive notes on a subject and then forgetting about them or losing them because they get buried in an ever-growing web of files. He found PKMs like Obsidian to be the best in this case. Then free. He continues, free. Both free like speech and free like beer. I like to support free and open source software wherever I can, and even a nominal monthly fee amounts to a substantial sum in a few years. I also want to be able to move my data to another program if something better comes along, so no proprietary data formats. Joplin.
Actually, you can export them out of that, but that's fine.
Oh, can you really? Is it just like plain MD format stuff? Or you have to like do janky stuff?
Well, where it gets stored is not like a plain markdown file, but the format itself is, there's ways to get it out of there.
Okay, so you got to manual it a little bit.
It's not as easy.
But you can get it out.
You can.
Okay, all right.
It's,
you know, when there are so many options that don't make you do that, I feel like that's kind of the...
It could be.
For someone that doesn't care, makes sense. But for...
For me, it's about the back end where it gets stored, but that's...
True. Right. Yeah, okay.
I mean, at least where I'm using it, because I'm using it for work, right? And so for work, I got... lots of OneDrive. Sorry, Microsoft.
Oh,
so I got a lot of OneDrive.
What you got?
I got a lot of OneDrive space. So it natively uses that. It does all the
sign-on
bits and stuff so that it can do that automatically.
Oh, but then would you be able to move that to like a Nextcloud or something, and then just the back end is there now?
I don't know if I added another backend if it would do that or not. I don't know.
Interesting. But other cloud providers are supported, right?
Oh yeah. No, yeah, like Google, if that was your thing, you could move it over there too.
Okay.
And I think you do it with like a WebDAV sort of thing with an xCloud backend. I haven't done that, but there you go. It might be an option as well.
So it's something to think about.
Right.
So he goes on, I've been out of school for decades, but I still have a lot to learn and I can use all the help I can get. Anki is probably the best spaced repetition flashcard program available, and it's open source. That's A-N-K-I, Anki, but it's not designed for note-taking. RemNote combines excellent spaced repetition flashcards with note-taking, but it lacks PKM capabilities. Mm. That's R-E-M-N-O-T-E, RemNote. I take notes for two reasons, to help me learn a subject and to enable me to find the information when I need it later, so I want the best of both the spaced repetition world and the PKM world, and I want it to be fast and easy to learn. I've decided to settle on 3 out of 4. Logsec, L-O-G-S-E-Q, is a PKM that is very similar to Obsidian, but less well-known. In my opinion, the best difference between the two programs is that Logsec has true spaced repetition flashcards and Obsidian does not. Logsec is also false, but I'm finding it to be difficult to learn. The developers are actively working on the documentation, so it should be easier to learn going forward. Keep up the good work. So I looked into Logsec, which was where he ended up landing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that is so deep. There's so much. It is not a typical note-taking app. It is so much more. Like tree style.
Nice.
Gathering and formulating and dealing with ideas and then like throwing them in the furnace and then melting them down and then rewriting and then it becomes this pristine diamond at the end of it, you know.
Holy cow. Like, that sounds impressive.
If you think of like how Git is for code, Logsec is for ideas. It is
nice,
so involved, but probably solves the problem better than anything else on the list. So I can see why you chose it, and I can also see why you know, Logsec has a bit of a ramp up.
Yeah.
To get used to, but it may very well be worth the time.
So it's like the Emacs of you know, note taking or
ideas.
What?
Yeah, it's because it's way more than note taking. It's like the Emacs of ideas.
Okay.
And everything you need to do to start brainstorming and then end with a finished product. I think Logsec will take you the entire way with like features. Not just, oh, you can do that. No, there are literal features in it that help you, like sticky board and postcards.
Okay,
and
that's cool.
Flashcards and writing and, you know, drafting, all kinds of crazy stuff. It does so much. So it may be worth a look. But when I looked at it, I was like, wow, you know, looking down into a canyon.
Yeah,
I was
like, wow.
All right. This is going to take a little bit more than a weekend to get into. So on the less, I think Obsidian is FOSS-ish.
Right.
Right. It's the storage that
right.
you pay for.
Yeah, I think so.
Obsidian's the other thing I've been looking at because it's so pretty and it gives you the ability to write. So I think, you know, Scott and Doug, Obsidian is, I've gotten so many recommendations for Obsidian. That seems to be the only thing that anybody ever agrees on is Obsidian has been a steady drumbeat of do it, do it, do it. So I think I might try Obsidian. And then I may fall back to QOwn Notes because it's so comfy. I already use Nextcloud all the time. So we'll see how that goes. And, you know, lastly, he left us a link.
Yep.
About a year ago or 2 years ago, someone did a comparison of Obsidian, Rome, Logsec, and RemNote. So we'll have that in the show notes.
Yep.
So you can kind of get a better idea of what all these look like and how they work. But I really appreciate the... all the suggestions for note-taking apps. I didn't realize it was so near and dear to people's hearts.
There are so many. It's amazing. And some of them are like really, really good. Yeah, definitely. And it even got me to think, you know, maybe I need to move on to something else too. So
maybe
Leo might drag me along on this ride yet.
We'll see. We'll see how this goes. But Obsidian's looking really cool. QOwn Notes is looking really cool. Yeah, we'll see how this goes.
We'll see how it goes, yeah. And so, a little Gentoo focus. We haven't done... Well, we did that. We do that. We focus on it. And so...
We do that, but this one's specifically to you, Dan. You've had a little issue that's been simmering for a little while.
I have. I gotta get it done. I gotta get it done. Anyway,
that's right.
Genspander 1223 writes in some good little tips on getting my bootloader back.
Hold on, before you get there, did you go with the what is that EFI thing?
I haven't done Refind yet. No.
Refind, that there was EFI in the name somewhere. Yeah, Refind. Yeah. Okay, so not yet. So this is still pertinent. This is still good.
It's still valid. So he gave me some tips on how to get it. So basically, it looks like reinstall the kernel, but make sure your use flag has grub, and it'll regenerate the grub config on each kernel installation.
Is it that easy? There's no way it's that easy.
I feel like you
just missed a use flag.
Yeah, no, I feel like I had it because it was updating grub all along, but there was an update because I was on testing. And so I think there was an update to grub that kind of broke things that probably never made it to the regular stable version. It didn't go smooth and it basically wiped out my thing, but maybe I can get this to work.
Oof.
So maybe I can try it again and do it like through the cheroot. But connected to the internet, because that was the other thing I didn't do. I tried to do it offline, and maybe I need to connect and get some update stuff, too.
Well, there was another suggestion. I didn't bring in the feedback this time, but Arch Cheroot.
Yep, that's on the ISO. That's there.
Oh, okay.
So that speeds it up, speeds up all the mounting stuff for you.
Yeah, I did all that manually. It was.
I did,
let's
too.
Just say it was slow.
It was...
I only broke it like twice.
A little painful, but the Arch Cheroot thing speeds that up, gets all your mounts set up for you so that you don't have to keep typing all that stuff in there. So I do need to regenerate my grub config in the right spot because I did get grub reinstalled. However, for whatever reason, I botched something else and it wasn't seeing the kernel. So it wasn't putting that into the grub config. So I just ended up at a grub prompt when I reboot.
Oh, I see.
I gotta fix that yet. It's a pain.
Mm-hmm.
So and then you. This next section is for you, Leo. He's talking about you. You were talking about updating your configs with dispatch conf at one point in the video. He definitely recommends color diff here to make the output of dispatch conf colorful.
Yeah.
It gets easier. And we like colors and bling, so.
Oh, I do. It's like my favorite thing. If I have to be on the CLI, it better be pretty, right? Like,
right.
I don't mind being on the CLI when it's not pretty. I just, you know, if I'm going to be there, I might as well enjoy my time.
Right.
And this sounds like a really easy way to do it. I don't think I've used dispatch conf yet, but it's another way in the list of ways to deal with the configuration changes that have to happen just as a matter of course of updating your Gentoo system, because things change and you're the admin, so you have to handle it, as opposed to, you know, in like a Debian, this is like, you want to use a new one? And you're like, yeah, sure. And then, you know, blows up your whole system.
Debian, you know, the app-based stuff, it actually gives you a prompt and says, do you want to keep your old configuration file or use the new maintainer version? Right. And like, you have like a list of answers that you can provide.
It's like six, and it's like,
yeah, maybe.
Ignore?
Yeah, ignore. Yeah. Anyway, so it gives you a prompt, whereas Gentoo does not do that. It says you need to update your configuration files.
Yep, yep. At best, it suggests you should look at these.
Yep.
And I think it does stop you sometimes if you
have. It depends on the config.
Right.
Right. You run one of these tools, and dispatch conf is one of them, that basically does a comparison of the proposed, you know, a configuration file and your...
Yes, it's old one on the left and new one on the right.
Right.
And then you're meant to, like, are the changes in the new one ones that you want to accept?
Right.
And you can merge them or select only certain ones. I mean, it's a manual process.
You can pick the new one, you can pick the old one, or you can merge them together.
Right. And color diff really, really makes it seem like... Because that's the hard part of parsing
what's
through all that
different
thing, like,
right? You're reading it line by line and looking, and you know you don't know what the differences are necessarily, because it's not highlighted. So this would essentially do highlighting for you to know what's different.
Boom! Fantastic! I love the suggestion.
That's a great suggestion.
I would probably be doing this forever. So they follow on with just install app-misc for miscellaneous color diff and change the line in etsy dispatch-conf.conf to see the Gentoo.
This is there.
The Gentoo.
It's there.
Yeah, to, and then you got a line. Basically, it just adds the color to it. And then you'll immediately see if you want the changes it proposes. So that's something I have been needing. I like color. I need to be doing these configuration changes every now and then, so I might as well enjoy my time while I'm doing it. So, fantastic suggestion. This is probably how I'm going to go with it, because I like pretty.
I haven't dug into this. There's probably a wiki page in the Gentoo land, and I'll try to get a link to that in show notes.
Of course there is. Thank you so much, Jensmander. That was two fantastic suggestions, and hopefully we'll come back with some success on both.
Yes. Just got to put a little time in it. So you can catch all the great links at linuxuserspace.show. And if you want to get in on the action of the feedback, you can send us an email, contact@linuxuserspace.show. And that'll drop right into our inbox, and we'll read that and we'll get it into the show.
You got a lot to say. That's where you put all of it. We may not read it all, we may not read it out all on the show, but we will definitely read it all.
And if email's not your jam, you can still send it to us on the Fireside thing. So you can go to linuxuserspace.show/contact, and that'll bring up a little form. You can fill that out, and it'll still end up in our inbox, but you don't have to send an email to make it happen.
That's
so.
Right. If you leave an email address in that contact form, we can get back to you. But you know, otherwise it feeds directly into the show anyway. So it works out pretty good. And don't forget, because I forget all the time, don't forget we have lus.sh. So lus.sh to get to all this. Does lus, hold on. Let me check.
It gets,
lus.sh /contact. Does that work?
We're going to find out.
Yeah, it works.
It's short.
It
so
works.
It didn't take us long.
lust.sh/contact. Type it into your browser and then continue typing out a message to us. That would be awesome.
All right, that brings us to the next time. Next time, we're going to do another history episode, and we've been, you know, tinkering around with LXD, right? Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very lightweight. I think that's what the L stands for.
It is, and there's some great places to go catch that if you want to try it. It still exists, even though it's not really getting a lot of...
Yeah, 2021. Spoiler alert. The last LXDE, not QT, DE,
right,
was released in 2021. So
it's getting a little bit of love, but not a lot of love, and so it might be on the downhill slide a little bit. But yeah, it still exists in Fedora, Arch, Debian. I mean, it still exists in Ubuntu, but we don't have a flavor for it. So,
well, they'll be like, it'll still exist in Debian for a good 7 more years or so.
Maybe, yeah. But you can actually install it. Like, you can load up the live Debian disk and test it out on the live disk or install it. So,
fantastic.
So that's still out there, and that's what we're testing and going to be talking about. Leo, where can we find you on the internet?
Pretty much everywhere. I'm on all the things. I'm on the Lemmy and the whatever. So, but if you want to send me like a DM or something,
socials,
you can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do that over at leochavez@mastodon.social or Leo Chavez on the tweeters.
All right. And you can catch me at KC2BEZ at mastodon.social and also at KC2BEZ on X and probably everywhere else. So,
yeah. On Hex. Yeah.
Yeah. So, come back in a couple of weeks for more Linux User Space.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
I ended up using none of it, but everybody was always talking about how much ChatGPT helps you with writing and stuff.
Does it though?
And so, well, okay. So here's my thing. Like, I was halfway through the Mate episode, writing the history of it. And
yeah.
I'm like, you know what? Maybe ChatGPT, I have a suggestion or two that I hadn't thought about. And nope. I basically just read me the Wikipedia.
Oof.
And I was like, I've already done that.
Yeah,
and,
right.
I mean, you know, for as much as you can thank a robot, thanks, robot. Mm-hmm. But.
I mean,
no
it gets
thanks.
The ball rolling, but that's about as far as I think you can go with it, honestly.
Yeah, and I think that's how I will always probably use these things, unless there's some another huge leap lurch forward that that changes the game.
You know,
it's a good way to get through a brainstorm.
And the other thing I figured out is not everybody has the same web search foo that we do, probably. And so they're just not good at that, maybe, or just never learned it. And certainly it's going to be a thing going forward for the generation that exists now. They're not going to need it because they'll just get conversational with the thing, their computer box, and it'll spit out the AI blurb stuff.
Yeah,